Rivera, but right now, stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. A couple of things came to mind talking to a friend recently, and I noticed this big disparity between this one friend who just doesn't yearn for anything. No yearning. Sounds pretty sane, doesn't it? No yearning. You're just satisfied. Everything's fine the way it is. No yearning. And I thought about that and I said, wait a minute, what happens to yearning? How does it go away? Because as I think about it, I think about photosynthesis. Yes, don't you think about photosynthesis? I think about photosynthesis. Photosynthesis, you know, this whole beautiful procedure by which a plant, if you ever watched a time-lapse photograph of a plant growing, you see this leaf, you know, this little vine crawls up and it's going to get the sunlight. Especially if they're in a forest, you know, the vines go up the trees and they yearn for the sun. Yearn for it, because the sun is the bottom of all, the basis of all life. We run on sunlight. We yearn for the sun. If you ever looked at sun worshippers, people who are laying out at a beach, you know, and just setting them, it's like they're yearning for the sun. It's like they're little plants. You know, they're the leaves of like little tendrils yearning for the sun. Like some people must be more sensitive to it than other people. Some people must have a vitamin D thing going. Yearning. Well, what is yearning about? But it doesn't seem like yearning is completely dysfunctional if it's such an important part of nature. Now, recently I've been looking at another thing called the syndrome of disavowed yearning. These are people who often come from parents where the dad was too busy, and his job or career and mother lacked warmth. Often these are not bad parents. The dad was worried about earning a living and so focused more on the boss or his customers and clients than he did his family. The mom often came from a mother who also lacked warmth. It was a condition passed on for generations. In the ideal situation, a child feels most solid from the inside out when there is warmth, usually from a mom, which comforts them, and when they're hurt or afraid or just plain lonely, they get guidance, support, coaching that could lead to confidence and courage. Now, if these are missing, if that warmth is missing, the child's personality discovers that instead of feeling the pain from the lack of warmth and enthusiastic support, it hurts less if it disavows needing either. You don't need the warmth. You don't need the support. You disavow it. And it's a funny thing because the drummer of The Gifted Child by Alice Miller, in that book, she talks about two kinds of depression. She talks about depression and she talks about being narcissistic. And she says, you're either depressed or you're narcissistic. And she said, the narcissistic people were trying to get somebody to love them all the time. And the depressed people give up. So disavowing the need for your parents' love can lead to giving up on it and can lead to relinquishing yearning. What a funny two words to put back together, relinquish your yearning. Therefore, this person needs nothing. and they seem that way. And then they get in a relationship with somebody else who has got normal yearning. And so now you get a yearning person gets together with a disavowed yearning person. And the yearning person is great because they like to yearn. And a disavowed yearning person is great because they're impossible to get anything from. They'll give you a certain amount, but they can't give you the same reaction. They can't turn around and yearn for you. In the studio with me, my apprentice, Lauren Sykes, or the apprentice to this radio station, Lauren Sykes. Lauren, this is fascinating stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it sure is.
Well, we're getting in there. Lauren helps me find the research, digs out the thing, asks the questions. The so now two people get together, and there's one who is the in love one, yearning. Now they have a thing called limerence, which we're going to talk about also, and a yearning person is yearning for the love to be with the other person. They feel this kind of ache, this pain. You are my sunlight. Please be with me any minute now. And the other one is, that's very nice, but do me a favor. Don't strangle me with your love. Please stay at a distance. And you keep hoping and hoping that one day they're going to feel towards you the way you feel towards them. But it's not true when you have one person who is yearning and the other person is a disavowed yearner, it's not going to match. It's not going to match. The yearner is always yearning for something they can't get from the disavowed yearner. That doesn't make the disavowed yearner wrong. It just makes them bent. It makes them depressed. It makes them unable to take the risk of trying to get love. They don't want to take that risk. In the people who become high achievers in life, they sublimate that would have been an aching yearning into accomplishing things. So you have you want to accomplish, you yearn to be recognized, you yearn to be seen, you yearn for success. It's all about trying to get your parents to love you. And if you're like them, even if you don't fill up from the inside out the conditional grin of approval for what you do instead of the love and celebration for who you are certainly distracts you from the yearning. You know, so you do a performance and somebody applauds you, you do a good job and they say, good for you, you make some money, you put it in the bank, good for you. It's a temporary distraction, but the yearning stays. It's like the hunger that doesn't go away. And after many years of accomplishments, those grins of conditional love and approval wear thin, and you could feel empty. So it's very difficult when you have people who have disavowed yearning to get them to yearn. And you should kind of get to, if it could just be recognized, we could do one of two things. Maybe they shouldn't yearn. Maybe they'd be fine. You know, we found another thing. Yearning is the most following a loss. Contrary to the accepted theory, the two most important emotions following the loss of someone who dies is yearning and acceptance. In one of the studies recently done, assistant professor of psychiatry, director of statistical modeling at the University of Pennsylvania, acceptance is the norm of the cause of natural deaths. That's one. But yearning is the most common potential adverse psychological response. Yearning is the definitive feature of grief, and it's an emotion that most clearly reflects the absence of the deceased. Yearning is the longing for reunion with the deceased loved one. Heartache about the inability to reconnect with this person. Individuals may cognitively accept the death of a loved one, but they still pine for them. It's yearning. Now, what does that do for you? Well, let's go back to the geese. You know my story about the geese from Canada who fly down? And the geese have this unique quality. They make a sound that sounds like a human cry. Have I told you about this one? My geese story. All right. So they did a study on these geese. They want to know, why do the geese make this sound that sounds like a human cry? And they discovered that when the geese are flying south in formation, when you're in formation, the bird in front of you adds lift to your wings because of their flapping, sends air backwards, and it helps you, so you can fly a greater distance. So the formation, that typical A formation that we see with geese, is functional. It's not just one taking the lead. When one goose, what do you think happens if you're on a long trip, a six-month trip down south by flying, and a goose gets sick and falls out, gets a stomach ache, or gets shot down by somebody who's shooting geese? What happens when one goose falls out of formation? Well, the first thing that happens is a cry goes up. A cry, a sound that sounds just like human crying. And this cry is the sound of crying and the sound of yearning. What they discovered is that when the one goose is out of formation and the other geese cry long enough, if they cry long enough and the one does not come back, they're saying, "Will you come back? Will you come back? Here's where we are. Please come back. Please come back." That's what that crying is about. If they don't come back after a short period of time, the geese reshape their formation. Somebody fills in the spot and they continue on their way. That's what I think grieving is. I think grieving is crying to try to find out, will this person come back? And part of grieving is having that person, is feeling yourself yearning for them to come back. Yearning. They die, you yearn for them. You have a parent who died and you never let go of it. Probably you didn't complete the yearning of it. The most recent work on dealing with death and loss is in people discovering that the yearning needs more attention. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about a fun thing called yearning. Yearning is like part of life. It's part of photosynthesis. Now, I was looking, I said, I bet the Buddhists don't like yearning. So I looked up Buddhism and yearning. No, they kind of love yearning. We'll bring that in. And then I thought about music. Are there instruments that are yearning instruments and instruments that are not? And I immediately thought of Tchaikovsky. I thought, maybe there is some yearning in Tchaikovsky. And so I thought back and I thought of the sound of the violin. And so I'm going to play you a classic of yearning by violin. Nigel Kennedy. See if you could feel this one. Almost in tears, right? That's yearning by violin. Okay, how else could we yearn? How about this? Yearning by another instrument. No kidding, huh? You don't have to go much further than that. So it seems that we've got to have, here's another. And why do we love this so much? Why do we, right? Because it matches that piece of us, the yearning. We yearn with it. Sidney Bechet. You know, Gail Goldwyn once said, "The best antidote I know for depression is to yearn for something." She said, as long as you yearn, you can't congeal. There is a forward movement to yearning. Congeal, right? Oh, what are you doing? I'm congealing. I'm sitting around congealing. And that's kind of what they used to think. Freud used to base his hypothesis on a thing called homeostasis. He said, we're trying to reach homeostasis in the body. We're trying to find a place of balance in the nervous system. And he based this. All psychology was based on this. We're always trying to find a balance. Turns out that the neurologist later discovered that that's not true. We're not looking for balance. We're not looking for homeostasis. We're looking for a spot right before it where you're ready to fire, almost like a yearning to move. That's the ideal condition. Think of yourself when you're exercising. Think of yourself when you're pushing yourself. Think of yourself when you're stretching. It's the ideal condition is an alertness and a kind of a yearning to move, a kind of a stretching, a kind of an anticipation, a ready to give yourself. But if you grew up in a family where there were people who were starved for affection, where there were people who were not available, where you had a cold mother and her mother was cold, you don't yearn. You don't have it. So what you got to do is depress yourself. Push down. Push down that yearn. So there's, too much yearning. We talked about limerence before. Too much yearning is a scary thing. That's when a person yearns for somebody they practically don't even know. But now this gets interesting. You could yearn for someone who's a fantasy. Or you could yearn for a fantasy itself. I yearn to be on a beach and live on a beach. And then someone says, I'm going to give that person for a vacation. I'll give them a 2-week vacation on a beach. And then you get on the beach and you say, oh, no, this isn't what I wanted. Because very often the yearning is set up with a fantasy that is betrayed by the reality of it. The fantasy, you put a little target in front of you. It's like you put a little piece of food outside of your reach and you yearn for it. But when you get the food, no big deal. That happens a lot with chocolate. I think somebody I know, they yearn for chocolate. And then they get the chocolate and they say, well, that was okay, but I've had enough. Not as good as the yearning. Yearning for is very often better than the satisfaction of it. But not necessarily yearning in love. Yearning in love could be as great as the recipient, as long as the other person's not a fantasy. Armand DeMille here with you with a positive mind. We will be taking your calls a little later at 212-209-2900, not yet. But now let's talk about yearning and sexuality. Sexuality, I'm going to say that word again, sexuality. Human nature, just like photosynthesis, nature says, please repeat yourself. Please reproduce yourself. That's what nature says. So nature says we are going to, the most important thing that you could do is reproduce yourself. So nature sends your body on a search to go find a way of reproducing. Now, unfortunately, for most males and females up until this recent generation who learned to do it by proxy, it required a male and a female. Nowadays we could do it by renting, hiring, implanting, any number of things, splitting our genes. We could find all kinds of ways of doing it in this generation. But in sexuality, there is a yearning to connect. We could say it's the male sexuality, testosteronic drive. And we call that a sexual drive. Or is it a yearn? Is the yearn built in so that the male will want to reproduce and the female will want to do it back? I mean, just look at the bodies of people having sex. The pelvic thrust itself tells you that the body is carried forward just to reproduce, get this to happen. Call it sexuality. That's the goodie they gave you to make it happen. See, they said it's going to happen this way. That's the goodie they give you, but it's not it would happen anyway. In all of nature, there's a need to reproduce. So sexuality is yearning. Now, what if you're someone who did like the earlier person, doesn't yearn? Well, then you might have a stunted sexuality. You may be receptive, you may receive, but you don't feel the drive. I've heard a lot of people come to me with feelings of stunted sexual drive, and they say, I don't know why, but I just don't want it. It's easy to point to testosterone and say, well, you got a low testosterone level, but you know what you could really point to? There's no yearning. And why is there no yearning? Maybe you turned it off. A little psychotherapy and let's open up your need to turn it back on, that frustration that you had in early childhood. And maybe your yearning can be reawakened. Because, you know, when you lose yearning, you get flat. Flat. Should be a condition of flatulence. Should be feeling nothing. No yearning. When a person moves, when a person exercises, they have yearning. But yearning and possibility go together. Yearning and fantasy go together. I'm also suspicious of pornography. I was recently, of course, everybody wants to judge pornography as being a bad thing. They do. And I understand. I think there's a lot about pornography that is misuse and terrible and all that stuff. However, what is it really about? And what happens in seeing erotic images, men or women? What they awaken is not the desire for the person they see on the page, but their own desire. Why do people use images, sexual images, to bring themselves to sexual satisfaction? You know, it's themselves they're bringing. They don't care about the other person. It's about waking up the yearning. And the yearning very often is dependent on the visual. So if you can't yearn, then it's hard to be sexually active. It's very sex. Now let's look at this other part. Lauren, what was the part you were thinking about food and yearning?
Well, with food, again, just like with sex, food is necessary. Our relationship with food is on a daily basis. So there's a very thin line of having an abusive relationship with food. Because, again, food could be used as comfort. And you can overindulge, overeat.
You know, and it's a funny thing about people who are anorexic, mm-hmm. right? They don't allow themselves to want for food.
Just like suppressing the sexual desire, you're also suppressing your need for food.
And you're suppressing need for affection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a sad thing.
Yeah.
Hey, 212-209-2900. In the Enneagram, one of the things that they talked about is there was an interesting concept, and the concept was the following. Before you're born, you are a part of God. That's the theory. Before you're born, this is a Sufi belief, I believe. Before you're born, you and God are one, whatever God is, the universe, whatever you want to call it. And then, as you're born, you're separated from your godliness in order to get through on the planet, which makes a lot of sense, because if you were connected to your godliness, who would take out the garbage? You just sit there and feel godly all day, right? So they put you on this earth and they say, now I want you to separate from your godliness so that you'll look to achieve everything. And then you're going to build houses, and you're going to build things, and you're going to get connected to people, and you're going to have families, because you're going to have a lot of missing places. What they say is that the original yearn is not for love, not for affection, but for your connection to God. The spiritual people go around and they say this, you know, you're missing your spiritual essence. Maybe that's true. And then the Enneagram goes through 9 different forms of ways that people separate from their godliness. And some of them people go to sleep. And other people get distracted. And other people wind up getting too invested in other people. yearning. St. John of the Cross said, it needs to hurt in order to be worthy of the word of yearning. Otherwise, it's just wanting. But yearning is wanting with pain. What do you yearn for? And my friends, what do you yearn for? What is it that you need? What is it you'd like? Jimmy Carter said, we become not a melting pot, but a beautiful mosaic. Different people, different beliefs, each with different yearnings, different hopes, different dreams. Each of us have different yearnings, and it's hard for us to recognize that your yearning is not mine. Ann Hillman, I do not know I was on a search for passionate aliveness. I only knew I was lonely and lost, and that something was drawing me deeper beneath the surface of my life in search of meaning. There's a hunger in people to go into that deep depth, to know that our lives are sacred and that our hearts are truly capable of love. It is a yearning to be all that we could be, a longing for what is real. So, what do the Buddhists say? What do the Buddhists say about this? And as I said, after the break, we'll be taking a call at 212-209-2900. Our romantic love. Romantic love, expansive, energizing, benevolent, except when it goes in the opposite direction. And when we're anxiously awaiting for the phone to ring, we wonder where the sparkle and passion went. We try to gain control by keeping score or imposing little love tests. You know? Buddhism's been around since the 5th century B.C. Love has been around even longer. How do you put the two of them together? Well, number one, remember Siddhartha Gautama was born the Indian-Nepal border in 563 B.C.E. The first time he left his palace, he was shocked to see the suffering out there. He didn't know it. He looked around to people and he said to everybody else that was denying the human suffering, he said to awaken people from their trances, and he became known as the Awakened One, the Buddha. The first noble truth, love always hurts a bit, and that's okay. Well, let's think about that. Human nature is imperfect, so pain is inevitable in life and in love. Cultivate Buddhist serenity about relationships by embracing the suffering that's part of love. So in other words, embrace the yearning. Ah, I really want to be with you. I really want to be with you. It's okay. It doesn't mean you have to leave your work and come be with me. In fact, I want to cultivate this yearn. Wondering hopefully if your beloved also loves you, yearning for your honey to be there when they're not there. Some of it is awful. The times your partner inevitably falls short. The times when you disappoint your partner. Adjusting to the ebb and flow of passion. If you're in love and suffering, don't automatically conclude that you're doing it wrong again. Conclude that you're alive and experiencing love. That's the first. When we get back from our break, I'm going to give you the rest of these noble truths that you might find useful. And then we will be taking your calls. This is Armand DeMille with you. I am sparked by the idea of yearning. I am, just to recap for you, it seems that the denial of yearning is important to people who had parents who were not generous in their love. And if you're lacking your yearning, maybe there's a way to liven it up. That's what we're hoping for. Because there should be the great second noble truth. Clinging and controlling makes love more painful, and our bodies and minds begin to break down when we go too far with it, much too far. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, some special music for you, and then we'll take your phone calls. We'll be right back.
I've made up my mind. Don't need to think it over. If I'm wrong, I am right. Don't need to look no further. This ain't lust, I know. This is love. But if I tell the world, I'll never see. to you, and that's exactly what I need to do if I end up with you. Should I give up, or should I just keep chasing pavements, even if it leads nowhere? Or would it be a waste, even if I knew my best? Should I leave it there? Should I give up, or should I just keep chasing pavements, myself out and fly around in circles, waiting as my heart drops and my back begins to tingle. Finally, could this be it? Oh, should I give up, or should I just keep chasing pavements, even if it leads nowhere? Or would it be a waste, even if I knew my best? Should I leave it there? Should I give up, or should I just keep chasing pavements, even if it leads nowhere? Yeah. Should I give up, or should I just keep chasing pavements, even if it leads nowhere? Oh, would it be a waste, even if I knew my place? Should I leave it there? Should I give up, or should I just keep on chasing pavements? Should I just keep on chasing pavements?
Adele, should I give up, or should I just keep chasing pavements? Well, that's yearning, you know, that's the question that happens to you, you know. And then comes a time in life where you go through physical changes. For men, they're dropping their testosterone. Remember, testosterone is the fuel. It's the fire that makes yearning so possible for men, special sexual yearning. But, you know, you talk about yearning for love and you talk about yearning for sex. It's hard to distinguish between the two when you're young. When you're young, for a man, he feels this drive. I've got to have you. I've got to have you. I think about you all the time. And we say it's sexual, but is it sexual, or is it love, or is it bonding, or is it union? What is it? We don't know. For the young man, he's driven by his sexuality, but it doesn't mean that's all he wants. And then his testosterone drops over time, and he goes from high scores of 700-800 down to 300 sometime in later life. Now he's got a lower testosterone. Now what happens? Now what does he do? Now he doesn't feel the yearning anymore. Now he doesn't feel the yearning. Therefore, he doesn't feel like trading away his personality as much like he used to. He used to lie all the time. He used to give himself away, anything to get that person to be his partner. So as he gets older and older, he loses that drive and he loses the desire to relinquish his integrity. And so they stay alone. Same thing happens to women, especially post-menopause. They say, I give up on relationships, many women say. And the reason they say it is, I was being driven by something. A need to bond, and a need to procreate, a need to have babies, a need to find a partner. Something was driving me. Now that that drive is gone, now that the eggs are barren, now that I'm just kind of there myself, that craziness of needing is not there. But, you know, it doesn't mean yearning goes. It means maybe yearning for relationship goes, but yearning still goes for beauty, for love, for appreciation, for a lot of other things. If all yearning goes, you're in trouble. that's depression. But if you're just losing the yearning and the desperation for relationships, it's okay. 212-209-2900. Before I take your call, let me get on with the rest of these. The second noble truth, Buddhist truth, clinging and controlling makes your love more painful. We all want stability and order, but the paper towel commercial is so wise. Life is messy. Everything is evolving. Things break down. Ideas have to be revised. Love will have more and more pain by revision. You want your mate to be the way he or she used to be. There's just one problem. You're both growing and changing. Celebrate the fact that your beloved are in an ongoing dynamic process of collaborative self-reinvention. Look at your sweetheart and ask yourself, who is this person? Who am I? What can we do for each other today? What have I seen that I've never seen before? Third noble truth. If you want love, joy, and passion, get some enlightened dispassion. Enlightened dispassion isn't that hostile stance that says, see if I care, or ha, you can't touch me, I'm so spiritual and so much bigger than you. It is being caring, compassionate, and engaged without clinging to your partner or needing too much. The good news is you don't have to withdraw to an ashram or meditate for hours a day to achieve the state. It can be attained through activities that are meshed perfectly with being in love. Fourth noble truth. Lightness and happiness in romantic love can be attained by anyone without luck or magic. The following actions that anyone can do will make your approach to romance bigger and make love more fulfilling. The first step is see your partner clearly. This means seeing him or her as another hopeful, fragile, worthwhile human being just like you. Be a collector of memories and facts that remind you of your partner's goodness and vulnerability. Don't stop until these ideas flood you with a desire for your mate to always be safe, happy, and loved. Number two, say the right things. Be truthful, but be positive. It doesn't mean happy talk all the time or withholding your true feeling. It means telling the truth in a gentle, constructive way. Humor is always a plus, but no hurtful sarcasm. Closeness is greatly enhanced by simply being together and not filling the void with empty chit-chat. Walk the walk. Back up your words with observable activities and outcomes. Here's how it works. You notice your mate struggling with a few extra pounds, and you sincerely want him or her to get a long life. You tell her that she's beautiful and perfect exactly the way she is now. But now you support her well-being by going with her on power walks, learning to cook a delicious, healthy meal, cutting down on your own calories, and sharing it with her. So this is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. There's a couple more things which I'll bring you to, but let's take one of your calls. I know you're standing by. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armand.
Hi there.
You've made me come up with so many ideas while you've been speaking about all of this. By the way, one quick thing. An older friend of mine very wisely said to me years ago that it's not so much sex that you'll remember in your life, but who the people were that really wanted to make love with you, that desired you. Mm. That's the real satisfaction later in life, to look back on that.
Interesting.
Yeah. The question I had for you is, how do you distinguish between yearning, like I yearn for my mom, and a lot of it is tied up with guilt feelings about wanting to go back to her somehow and make things right that I feel I did wrong. So how much is guilt bound up in yearning?
That's an interesting thing, you know. Of course, there is so much. What you're saying is there's something incomplete with your mother. And you don't know how to get this completed. And any good technician, which I mean therapist, would be able to get you through this by actually having you live through this experience. You know, this is where they are, where the therapist becomes a technician. And what they would do is they would guide you into a dialogue between you and your mom. And I know just the person who does it. There's a woman, Judy Silberstein, who does it fabulously well. And what they do is they take you into it to find out what's the basis of it. And probably underneath your guilt, you're going to find a lot of anger and rage.
Yeah.
And so what you want to do is we stay attached to the guilt because we want to avoid the anger and rage.
Okay.
Because the anger and rage would lead to another thing. It would lead to a real separation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways we hold on to people who die is we stay guilty.
Yeah.
Right? It's a way of holding on.
You know what you also made me think of, related to that, Armand, is that my mother was a yearner, and I think that's why she couldn't really give much to her own. She had six kids, overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I can see in her, now that you're talking about it, that she was yearning for something in her past and probably didn't even notice us most of the time. She
Absolutely.
Was wound up in that.
Absolutely.
It's yeah.
So
Thanks
sad.
A lot, Armand.
Thank you for calling
okay,
in.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I was reading an article today, I think I have it here, about poverty and depression. Do I have it there, Lauren? Is that an article? No, it's in my office. They were saying that they were looking at the number of people who would qualify for the poverty line of income and how there was a very high 70 or 75% prevalence of depression among the parents who are in the poverty, who are poverty living. Meaning that a child grows up with somebody who's depressed. And what's it like growing up with a depressed parent? Enough about the poverty, that's one thing, but I've seen very impoverished people grow up with good spirits. But what's it like having a parent who is always yearning to be somewhere else? 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. I'd like to speak to Armand about a
girlfriend. You're speaking to me right now. Sure. I'm here now.
Yeah. I've known this girl for like 3 years, and she keeps moving from place to place. She keeps calling me, and I'm trying to get the school safety job, and, I just can't get my act together, getting this job and getting an apartment with her, and... she's exactly what I wanted,
She's what you wanted, but let me understand the difficulty. She's what you wanted, and she keeps calling you. Does she want you?
She wants me.
And the two of you are having difficulty finding an apartment?
Exactly.
Why is that?
It's all because of the money, and she's got a daughter.
And she has a daughter, so it's a complication.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's got like a 21-year-old daughter. And she says, how's it going to look, you being in the household? With, she grew up with a stepdad. And, it's very difficult.
Well, do you have intention when her daughter leaves home, which your daughter will do eventually, do you have intentions on being with her? Does she have intention on saying to you, look, I can't have you in the house now? Because my 21-year-old daughter is here. But when she leaves, you and I will get together.
Yeah.
You think that's true?
Yes.
Well, that's something to look forward to in the meantime, and trying to develop yourself in all the other ways as you go through it. And it means it's one of those loves that have built into it a certain pain. And it's an okay pain.
Yeah.
I know it's difficult for you, I hear.
Yeah.
The job thing is difficult, the work thing is difficult, the love thing is difficult. You have my heart, I hear.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, when we get together, I'll call you.
Good, thank you. I'd really
okay,
like it.
Okay, thank you, Armand. Take
sure.
care.
212-209-2900. This is Armand. But, sometimes you get together with a partner and your partner's sick. Your partner's not well. And it's so painful to watch somebody you love going through such pain and difficulty and living with them and loving them at the same time. But it's okay. It's part of life. It's going to happen later anyway. If you have that relationship, you have that relationship. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you doing today, Armand?
Good.
I'm calling from New Jersey. My name's Mariam. And I just wanted to tell you that this topic that you're talking about really resonates with me in a very personal way.
You're a yearner.
Well, no. I mean, I don't know. You see, the thing was, is that, you know, you were talking about, you know, Sufism and how it tells you that, you know, you're yearning for God. And I did go through a very spiritual period in my life, and I didn't have any need really to connect with anyone. I was okay. All of a sudden last year, I don't know, maybe I'm going through some physical shift in my body, but I am just like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. There's something in me that is driving me to want to connect with someone. But this is the problem, and I don't know if you've ever, if it's ever come up with you or with people that you talk to, but the way things are, you know, in terms of relationships, things are very different now, you know? Maybe it's because of, you know, people are so...
Well, I didn't hear the last thing you said. People are what? I'm losing.
Everything is driven, and if you're not interested in having sex with them right away, they don't want anything to do with you.
Uh-huh.
So you want to connect with... But,
well, you know what's happening? Wait, something's happening with your cell phone. Are you sitting in one place?
Yeah.
I'm losing
you. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay.
That's better. Now, let's talk about this issue if they want to have sex right away or no relationship at all. Okay, I understand that. I understand that. I understand that it doesn't mean that all they want is sex. But they figure sex is part of the pie and I want to have sex. And if you don't have that with me... can you tell me when we will? You know, and I mean, there is a way of doing it, but you know, let me ask you something about your reluctance to have sex. Okay, let's talk about that for a minute.
All right.
What about that side of it? And I'm not saying you should, but what's your reluctance? What are you afraid of? You're afraid of once it's over, you lose everything? What happens? What do you think?
Well, you know, there's that. Well, first of all, I'm afraid of STIs.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, so you're afraid of disease.
Yes, I'm afraid.
Okay, that's
one. You know, I try to have frank discussions with people, but they're not trying to, you know, it's like they don't care about that.
Man, well, you're hanging out in the wrong neighborhood. I'm telling you, you're in the wrong neighborhood because if you run with guys who say, you know, I don't care about STDs, this is what I want. I want sex now. I want to use no contraception.
Right.
And I mean, you're in the wrong neighborhood. You got to just move, you know, move down to the village or something. Just get out of that neighborhood. Get away from that bar.
Oh, well, you know, you don't want to be, you know, I just don't want to be vulnerable. And then it's like, what am I really doing?
I know. But, you know, but if you went to a different location and met people with some kind of integrity, this doesn't happen. This only happens when you're fishing at the bottom.
Ah, see, thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah.
I just thought it was the whole planet that had just
No. It's just everybody in Englewood. I'm only kidding. I have a friend in Englewood. No, it's just certain places. But I mean, there's a place called the Open Center in New York. They have these workshops at the Open Center. I gave a workshop there myself.
Oh, okay.
You know, you go there once in a while. You take one of their classes. You meet people who are at least saying, I read a book. You know what I mean? They're at least at some level. Or you go and you listen to, you get a T-shirt that says The Positive Mind, a WBAI. I don't sell one, but make one.
Yes.
Wear it. And then if anybody comes along and says, hey, I know that program, that's it. You're fine. You know, I think this is the best dating scheme in town.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling
in.
I know you got to get the other call.
I do. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
212-209-2900. We got to have that. You know, we need a T-shirt. We need a hat that says The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. Or just The Positive Mind. And it's a way that people can get to meet each other. Let's take the next caller. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Hello. How are you doing? My name is Laura, and I'm in New Jersey.
Hello, Laura. Not in Englewood, I hope.
No, not in Englewood.
Good.
But I'm really fascinated by your show. I really like it. I think I have some friends around the world that are listening to your show. I saw the mention on Facebook, WBAI, the new listener. So
yeah,
definitely going to put that out there and promote it. I had a friend who gave me some great insight and opened my mind to some more radical thinking, more from the 1900s, Christian D. Larson. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Tell me.
His writings. Yeah, A Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes, and all those great people. I think that, unfortunately, the relationship, I was totally like what you're saying, the yearning. And I'm fascinating. I'm a songwriter, and I'm getting ready to dive into this subject and really figure out how I can write some new music from it. So I thank you.
Oh, sure. Well, how do you intend to reach into it?
Yeah, I think that just going back to where, you know, I was raised and what I was raised with, recognizing depression, recognizing substance abuse, and longing and yearning for something that's a dream other than what is reality, and kind of just opening up all those subjects and relating to what people go through with how these subjects
interact. Courage. It takes courage and a willingness to explore yourself. But you're so right. It's about staying conscious. You know,
exactly.
And it's about trying to get conscious, and any of it, if it brings you there, it brings you to such a higher level of functioning that makes life understandable and somewhat beautiful, even if it is painful.
Yeah. It also means just trying to stay positive in thought and spirituality with yourself so that you're not always wanting to escape. I think the yearning is another part of escape.
Absolutely.
Like the people who, like me, I've had problems with alcohol. I experienced problems with drug abuse. It's just, it's all related, the sexuality, the yearning, the desire for something to even escape. And sexuality is great, but I think people can take anything and become in excess and obsessing of something. And believe it or not, if it's a positive thing, it's so much better than diving into something that's negative. And, of course, everything has a negative and positive to it. So you can be yearning and use it to your advantage, be very healthy with it, or you can use it to a distracting negative force that just brings you down.
How perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for putting the whole show together in in one sentence. Thank you. Thank you
one
so much.
Oh, goodness. I really thank you for your show. Thank you so much for being out there.
Sure, thank you. Yes, we are expanding our Facebook presentation. Lauren, what do you do to get to the Facebook WBAI? What do you do?
Yes. Become a fan of Armand DeMille on Facebook. You can friend him, and you can also join his group in order to get updates.
Updates and articles and stuff that we're sending out. It's
exactly.
A new Facebook thing we're just doing now. Lauren's in charge.
Yep.
Thank you, Lauren.
You're welcome.
Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind. We will be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. And until then, I'll give you a little Sidney Bechet and be back with you on Tuesday. Go to thepositivemind.com or the Facebook page for The Positive Mind and join us, my friends.